Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce my guest, Maribou Latour, who is a permaculturist and an aquaponics expert. So I think everyone's going to love this episode. We're going to learn some new things. She's the founder of Visionary Aquaponics Podcast and a founding member of the New Mexico Aquaponics Association. So welcome to the show, Maribou.
Thank you, Jackie.
And go ahead and tell us a little more about yourself.
Okay, so my name is Maribou Latour. Originally, I'm from Miami, Florida, and it's a very, you know, water abundant place. And about 11 years ago, I moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and became really interested in the water issues because, as you all know, the Southwest is, you know, in a drought and has had some serious water issues. So for the last 11 years, I've been asking the question, how do we grow food in the desert? And that has started me on a path into permaculture, organic gardening, agroforestry, and aquaponics. And currently, I am the founder of the Visionary Aquaponics Podcast, which has a mission to inspire a global aquaponics movement. And that is because aquaponics is a super efficient way of growing food using less water, using about only 5 to 10% of the water in that you would use in conventional agriculture. Because it's
aquaponics. Go ahead and explain to us maybe what aquaponics is and how.
Okay,
that...
great. So aquaponics is a method of combining aquaculture and hydroponics. Aquaculture is fish farming or farming any kind of aquatic species. And hydroponics is growing plants in a soil-less nutrient solution. Aquaponics takes the best of both worlds and actually combines them. So in fish farming, a lot of times there's some, you know, pollution involved with that because with high density fish farming, you need filtration. The fish produce ammonia and that water becomes toxic to the fish. So you eventually have to dump the water out, and that's on a consistent basis, or you have to filter the water with a lot of filtration. Now, I'm not an aquaculture expert, nor am I a hydroponics expert, but in hydroponics, you basically take nutrients that you would buy from the store or create organically and put them in water, and plants are growing in water. And in hydroponics, you'd also have to dump the water out eventually because those kinds of nutrients tend to have a lot of salt in them and it builds up in the water and you have to dump the water out eventually and refresh it. So in an aquaponic system, by combining these two systems, you have the ammonia-filled water, the water filled with fish poop and ammonia flowing to the grow beds that carry the plants. And the plants can be in rafts or they can be in media beds. They could be even growing vertically in PVC pipes. There are a lot of different ways you can grow. We call that deep water culture if they're in rafts, media beds, NFT is nutrient film technique, which is just basically a small flow of water going through pipes with holes where the plants sit and their roots sit in the water. So there are a lot of different ways you can connect them, but the idea is that there's a connection and a symbiosis between the fish and the plants. And as that nutrient-filled water goes from the fish to the plants, bacteria convert what would otherwise be a pollutant, ammonia, into plant fertilizers like nitrate and nitrite. And so there's a whole process where the bacteria that just come naturally into the system, or you can inoculate it, convert a pollutant into a fertilizer for the plants. And plants love it. They go crazy over it, and they tend to grow twice as fast. Obviously, they don't need any watering because they're constantly in water, and that water is cycling back to the fish clean, because the plants are taking up all those nutrients and a lot of times the solids and
that's
but anyway
amazing.
Yeah, so they're just taking up the nutrients, and they're growing off of it, and they're providing clean water to the fish. So they're acting as a biofilter for the fish. So there's no dumping of water, and sometimes you have to top off the water due to evaporation and the plants taking up some water. But it's extremely efficient for growing a lot of different kinds of plants, like lettuces, basils, tomatoes, a variety of different vegetables. And it's something that a lot of people have experimented with. So you can grow strawberries. There's so many different things that you can grow in an aquaponic system. And that's constantly being experimented with in different types of systems. So different types of systems like different kinds of plants more, you know. Media beds tend to like things that are more deep rooted, and raft beds are better for floating light things like greens and some lighter weight things. And you can also grow things like watercress and a variety of things, including not just food for humans, but food for animals like fodder and medicinal plants. It's a beautiful way to garden in the desert, as well as if you don't have space for a soil garden, or if you live in an apartment, or if you have a rooftop. It's a great way to create a man-made ecosystem that pumps out food for you and fish.
I'm so inspired, and just I think the thing that seems like such a contradiction, because you call it aquaponics, so it sounds like it's something that's very water intensive, and yet you're saying that this is a great thing for in a desert where there's not a lot of water. So I'm so intrigued to hear more about how this works and to research it, and it's interesting because we were just talking about food deserts, not the last episode, but my friend Lisa Stewart was on, and we were talking about some food deserts here locally in our area, here in Montana, which is more in the city where people are living, and there's like big shopping malls right by, they built this giant new high school, and there's no grocery store anywhere near there.
Yeah. I got into this because of food deserts as well. And there are just so many communities that either don't have enough water to grow food, don't have good soil. And often in the desert, we don't have good soil because we've destroyed it through overgrazing and deforestation and things like that. So a lot of times whatever soil we have, people take the weeds off and they take the roots out and the trees out. And then eventually it blows in the wind. And when it does rain, it flows away, and then it gets baked by the sun all year round. So if we don't have that organic matter on our landscapes, we lose the quality of our soils, and this is the process of desertification. And so aquaponics is a tool that we can use to save water while we're growing food, save an enormous amount of water, but it's also a great way to remediate soils, because that water is so alive and so full of nutrients and plant fertilizers, nitrates, and I have stories of people who have used it accidentally as an overflow to trees and in really terrible rocky landscapes that didn't even have soil. And wow. Within a very short period of time, those rocky landscapes became incredibly gorgeous soil, black soil filled with microorganisms and worms and mycelium and, you know, like totally alive. So it is a great way to jumpstart ecosystems as well, because the water itself is a beautiful product of the system. This constant filtration between the plants and the fish and the plants and the fish is just creating this miraculous, you know, fertilizer, soil remediating agent. And so you could have one set up, you know, you could have one set up in a parking lot or, you know, even off of an apartment balcony or something, but you could have the overflow going to some place that needs it and start building soil. Or you could take a little bit of the water and start inoculating parts of your garden with it, or even your compost.
Nice. I just think this is fascinating. I was just looking up really quick what the definition of a food desert is from the, and this is from the Agricultural Marketing Service from the United States Department of Agriculture. And they say a food desert, food deserts are defined as urban neighborhoods and rural towns without ready access to fresh, healthy, and affordable food. Instead of supermarkets and grocery stores, these communities have no food access or are served only by fast food restaurants and convenience stores that offer few healthy, affordable food options.
Yeah.
I was hoping it was going to say, you know, like how many miles, but I don't see that. But I'll put the links to that page in the show notes. It might have more in there if people are interested.
Well, funny enough, I was just at a gas station last night that, you know, on the outside of the store, it says, "Please help us become your neighborhood grocery store."
Oh, nice.
No, well, it's a gas station. Oh. I mean, but they're, you know, what they mean by grocery store is the typical boxed products. They're not talking about real food.
See,
so that I would consider, you know, is what a lot of food deserts have, is all they have are the 7-Elevens and the gas station grocery, you know, products. They don't have real fresh produce. They don't have real organic food. They don't have access to those things. So
see, the weird thing is where I live in Montana, up here, we actually, our local grocery store, which is a total convenience store right on the highway with the gas pumps, looks just like your ordinary 7-Eleven town pump, but it actually is a full-size grocery store. You know, they have regular produce, they sell Western Family, I mean, they have, you know, anything you would find in any grocery store, and they actually have some of the best prices around. So I guess that's what I was picturing.
Do they have produce there?
Yeah, I mean, they have, yeah, it's like a regular grocery store. I mean, they have everything from, yeah, just a total, you know, lemons, apples, you know, lettuce, regular. They have a whole produce section, a whole, you know, cheat. They have meats that they even have like a butcher who actually, she makes like all their jerky and their sausage and everything. They have a full, you know, a regular a deli. They have, you know, I mean, anything that you would buy. I mean, it's been my number one shopping store for most of the time that I've been here, for 20 years. It's just kind of like a weird thing, though, that we have that here.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that there are any others like that elsewhere in Montana. It's just kind of a weird thing that our local, I mean, maybe because it was a grocery store before it became a gas station on the highway. It was a grocery store in one of the local towns, and they moved onto the highway and the grocery store went with them. So I guess that's what I was picturing.
Yeah.
It is kind of a weird thing that we do have here. Most people look at it as a high-priced convenience store and wouldn't think of shopping there, but they actually have really good prices. We're lucky, though.
When I used to live in the Northeast, like in New England and Massachusetts and Vermont, there are a lot of farms, and people, you know, basically you can drive down the road and you can just see a little farm stand, nobody there at all, but a little box for money and fresh food, either fresh eggs or fresh produce. And you can literally go and pick the stuff up and drop money in the box. Now I had never seen anything like that before. And we definitely don't have that here in New Mexico, I think, or at least where I live, we don't have that. I think people start to worry about people taking food and not paying. And so I think that works in some places, but we don't have enough small little stops farms where you can just, yeah, grab some fresh eggs right there off the farm. Or so
we used to have one of those in up where we live, but they kind of, I don't think they do the stand anymore. I think she just has expanded so much. She sells just regular to the stores and stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
Down outside of Whitefish, there used to be a little place, but they're few and far between. And actually, in Long Island, where I grew up in New York, there's still, I think, quite a few of those places. My mom's actually always telling us we should do that, but we don't have highway frontage. Like, mm-hmm. people aren't going to come. We're 2 miles off the highway, and people aren't going to drive up to our place. And we don't have mm-hmm. that much extra produce yet, but maybe this year. But and I think also with the rise in farmers markets, I think people do more of that kind of.
Yeah, we definitely CSAs. Have a thriving. Yeah, we definitely have a thriving farmers market here, and yeah, CSAs are amazing. I love that. I want to have my own aquaponic, passive solar aquaponic CSA here at some point for culinary herbs. Things like strawberries and tomatoes and some other things that I'm even looking into finding some medicinal herbs that the local herbal stores would want, as well as flowers, both edible and ornamental for weddings and things like that. I think that would be super cool to have here. So
that's what I want to be, a flower farmer. My husband, he does the vegetables, and I'm going to work on the flower part of it. And I like that. Like, my goal this year is to plant 750 sunflower seeds and harvest 2,000 sunflower blooms if I can. And we'll see if they make it to seed. I've got about 375 in the ground, I think, already. So
nice.
That's my goal for this year, and to see if I can be consistent enough to take them to market, if I can get it spread out enough so that I have blooms all through August through September.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe I'll think about trying to sell them more next year. So yeah. And then we grow a lot of zinnias and snapdragons, and he planted a bunch of irises a few years ago, and I see that they are just going crazy this year. We have like hundreds of irises all of a sudden.
Wow.
So that's kind of exciting. They haven't bloomed yet, but they're about to. And yeah, so, well, cool. Well, let's dig a little deeper.
Sure.
So the first question I ask everybody, Marabou, is just to kind of get to know you a little, tell us about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? Would you grow? Who were you with? Like, just to give us a little background there.
My first gardening experience actually happened in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And it was here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I really wanted to grow tomatoes because tomatoes are expensive, and I love salsa. I am crazy about salsa. I have eaten salsa all my life. My parents are Puerto Rican and Cuban, so we grew up eating lots of salsa, homemade salsa, and it does not compare to store-bought salsa in any way. So in order to, have that experience, I wanted to grow my own tomatoes. I was also studying gardening in the desert, so I wanted to get my hands dirty. I wanted to learn how to build soil and use little bit of water, not much. So I had a drip irrigation system set up. I didn't set it up, but I was renting, and my landlady had one set up. So she encouraged me to have my own little space in the garden, and I built a little trellis, and I placed it near a sunny wall and started growing those tomatoes, and actually started growing some basil as well and some jalapeno peppers. And I think I was maybe 21 or 22, I think, when I first had my first garden. And at the same time, I was gardening in multiple places. So that was my first personal garden. But I was also experimenting at this place called Ecoversity right across the street at the time. It's not in existence anymore. And I was experimenting with a no-till method of Fukuoka style, a Japanese farmer. And the double dig method, which I believe is John Jevons. a way of digging really deep and overturning the soil in order to aerate it. And here in New Mexico, we have a thing called caliche, which is a clay pan. I don't know if it's a clay pan or if it's a calcium or what, but it's a very thick pan of solidified dirt underneath the soil that it gets really difficult to garden because of it. And our soils are alkaline, and there's not a lot of organic matter in a lot of our soils. So, and in any case, I was trying to figure out, is the no-till method better, or is double dig method better, or what? And so I tried all kinds of different things, and it was great. I had a blast kind of experimenting with that, and growing all kinds of heirloom plants from Seeds of Change, which is here just a few towns over, I believe. We had gathered some heirloom seeds at a seed exchange, and we were growing all kinds of things. I can't even remember how many different kinds of things we were planting, but it was a good experiment. And those tomatoes that I grew just in my own backyard, I didn't do any kind of double dig. I just put mulch, and they just came out amazing. And there was the drip irrigation system. So twice a day, just a very little bit of water, maybe, I don't even remember. And I just had a surplus of amazing tomatoes that I could eat fresh.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, right? You just don't really do that with a lot of store-bought tomatoes, and mm-mm. I'm really picky.
The taste is just completely different. I think after you get used to eating homegrown tomatoes, you can't go back to store-bought tomatoes. I think the same with eggs. You know, once you have chickens and your own eggs, it's hard to ever go back to the store-bought eggs.
So true.
But tomatoes, for me, are the biggest one. Like, I mean, hardly eat tomatoes from the store in the winter.
Yeah, I could eat them without salt, and I just literally bite into them. Mm-hmm. Like any other fruit, and it's just amazing. I don't think I had that experience in Miami, even though we made our own salsa. I don't think I ate the tomatoes like that because they weren't mine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, these were the best tomatoes I'd ever had in my life.
That's interesting. So your parents don't garden?
No.
They're going to start now that you're doing this.
Well, there are different forms of gardening, and I think my dad, he definitely has started to garden in the last 10 years since I left Miami. He grows a few things in the backyard. Trees were mostly the things that people would garden. You know, we had avocado trees, coconuts, avocados and stuff, but those, you know, they're usually like 10 years old already. There's really nothing you do except harvest. Mm-hmm. So there's an appreciation for fruit trees where I grew up in Miami because there's so many of them. But my parents at the time when I was a kid weren't really gardening. So
cool. All right. Well, let's just, I know, we kind of have a time thing here, so let's maybe just, kind of go with the other questions. So tell us quickly, like, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you? Just briefly.
Organic gardening is a way of gardening and designing with nature. So basically gardening in a way that is non-toxic, no pesticides, learning how the relationships work among the bugs and the plants and companion planting, and how to build soil and how to mulch in order to build more soil. So to me, it's a non-intrusive way of growing food, and it's an incredibly healthy and nutritious way to grow our food, as well as habitat and spaces for microorganisms and bugs and birds and bees and all the critters that we need.
Excellent. And then who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques then?
I don't think it was anyone in particular, but it was definitely the question of food and food deserts and deserts. that really got me thinking about growing food, especially when I started realizing that there was such a thing as GMO food versus organic food. And I'd never, you know, I think I was in high school when I realized in chemistry class that there was such a thing as organic, and I thought everything was organic. I never would have thought there was a difference until someone distinguished that to me. And so I started looking into that and looking at local issues and global issues with food and water security. And that got me to really questioning how people grow food and how people grow food in the desert. And I instantly wanted to start learning how, because I wanted to be a producer, not a consumer. And I wanted to have control over the kind of food that I was eating.
Excellent. So then how did you learn how to, you told us a little bit about how you learned to garden organically. Was it from that Ecoversity place?
No,
it sounds like you've studied a lot.
I studied a lot. But studying it and putting it into action, I learned a lot about soil science and sustainable water systems and rainwater harvesting and the importance of mulch in order to retain, create organic matter and protect the soil from wind erosion and the sun baking the microorganisms and the water washing it away. So I learned the importance of organic matter and mulch, especially in the desert. It's one of the biggest issues we have, is we need to protect our soil with this top layer of organic matter or mulch. And that's one thing that I see a lot of people not doing, is they pull weeds, they pull roots, they uncover the soil, and it bakes in the sun. So to answer your question, how did I learn? I just started experimenting. I started reading. I took a permaculture design course in 2009, and that really shaped a lot of the way that I garden and think about food. But I was already studying it, you know. It just all came together in a permaculture design course, and then I continued on with that, and I lived in Costa Rica and started planting all kinds of medicinal plants and trees, fruit trees, fuel trees, all kinds of stuff. In Nicaragua, I spent a year in an agroforestry project. And agroforestry is a way of gardening like the forest, taking a forest structure but growing trees that are useful to humans and creating habitat in a design system. So you have fruit trees and fiber producing trees and nut trees and trees for fuel. So you know you're growing them in a pattern that works. And I grew all kinds of things like mango trees and star fruit, and lemon, lime, cacao, coconut, coffee. I grew all kinds of trees. And so I learned from not just growing vegetables, but how to grow trees and how to design them into your landscape, and also how to use rainwater harvesting techniques to capture the most water in the soil where it lands, where you need it to feed your plants or your trees.
Well, I think you're going to be the teacher of the century. Your your knowledge is just exponential. I feel like I could ask you a million questions just on that one paragraph. But I know I know we have time restraints today. So let's go ahead and tell us about something that grew well this year or last season.
Last year, I grew about 10 different kinds of heirloom tomatoes. Again, tomatoes are one of my favorite things to grow because they're my favorite thing to eat. One of my favorite things to eat. And all of my tomatoes just grew incredibly well. And again, my backyard is actually north facing, but we have a lot of sun, and I put my tomatoes along a sunny wall. So it was the north side of my house on the sunny side. And so it's funny because I have friends who planted tomatoes weeks before me, but I put mine in the ground and just started, you know, watering them every day a little bit, but I gave them lots of mulch and lots of love. and nothing else. No fertilizer, nothing. Just love, water, sunlight, and mulch. And they grew incredibly quickly and pretty large. I have pictures I'll send you. And yeah, I grew all kinds, red, yellow, orange, purple, all kinds of heirloom tomatoes. They're delicious, and I actually canned them later on.
I saw that one picture on your website. What'd you use for mulch, can I just ask?
You can use a lot of different things for mulch. Actually, when I moved into my rental house here, they had literally de-weeded the entire backyard. The yard was bare. It was soil that was baking in the sun. And I quickly acted to get, I've bought a few bales of straw. And I just laid it over my entire backyard because I wanted to protect the soil from the sun and the wind and the water. I wanted to protect the microorganisms. And I've done this in many other places, and I have restored soils this way. I mean, clay, hard pan, soil, dirt, red dirt into black soil by using this very simple low-tech method, just laying straw over it. And literally within a week, you got like little seedlings starting to sprout, and within a few months, you got a layer of black soil underneath that. And so with my tomatoes, I use straw. You can use all kinds of things, wood chips, leaves from the fall. People throw them away. I store them. I keep them. I put them next to my compost, and I use them for any kind of mulch that I need as well. But straw is really great because it's very airy. So it's loose. It gives a lot of protection to microorganisms, and it traps air, and it's insulating. So even into the fall, you're still kind of keeping your tomato plants warm through this insulation, through straw, through the mulch. So it acts in many different levels.
We use a lot of straw for mulch too. So I was just curious. How about something that you're excited to try different or new next year? Something you're going to plant this summer coming up that you haven't done before, maybe anything new?
Well, this year I'm going to set up more aquaponic systems, and I'm going to grow wheatgrass in my aquaponic system. I've grown wheatgrass in soil in trays, but this time I'm going to experiment with using wheatgrass as a biofilter to my fish tanks. And I also want to grow watercress and microgreens. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I really want to grow is tomatillos, because like tomatoes, tomatillos they're just so amazing. I love salsa verde, green sauce, green salsa. It's incredible, and I want to learn to make that this year, so I'm going to grow my own tomatillos as well.
Nice. I love that too. I'm a big salsa. I put salsa on everything. So, and maybe I'll see if you'll share a good salsa recipe with me.
Sure.
Okay. How about something that didn't work so well last season? Was there anything that didn't go quite the way you wanted it to?
Well, I was experimenting with potatoes, and I've grown potatoes before, but actually I just didn't really check them, and I mounded them, but I didn't really have a place to put them. You know, potatoes like to be mounded, or some people put them in tires leach gas and all that stuff. So, or you can put them in barrels, and then as they grow up, you add more soil to them and stuff, or you can grow them in trenches and have a mound. I just did it a really low tech way, and I had a little flat piece of area, and I created a mound and put them in there. But honestly, I don't think it worked as well, because every time it would rain, the mound would fall apart, and so there's a good, you know, you need to have like a good space for potatoes that it, you know, at least has three sides or has a way for it to stay mounded. So I don't know what happened to my potatoes. I actually didn't check. They could have been growing, but I didn't check on them. So I was more interested in my tomatoes and basil.
I was going to ask you, so can you grow potatoes the aquaponics way, or are they going to be too heavy? And because they grow down by the roots, does that make a difference?
Yeah, it definitely does. Some root vegetables don't like to grow in aquaponics. Some will. Mm-hmm. They might kind of squeeze over the top of a raft, and they might even, instead of growing straight, they might grow wavy. Mm-hmm. But there are other ways of growing root vegetables in aquaponic systems. I would say as an overflow, you know, if I was to take water, you know, an overflow from my aquaponic system, I could put it in a potato patch in the ground, mm-hmm. and it would help fertilize it and water it whenever there's a rain, or I'd water it and maybe I'd give it a little bit of aquaponic water here and there. Some people will grow squash in an aquaponic system, but they let the squash trail out. So they start it in there and then it grows on the ground. So that would be another way of integrating it.
Nice.
Yeah.
How about something that you find is easy to grow or generally successful every time? And that could be the tomatoes.
Yeah. Tomatoes are easy to grow. Tomatoes and basil, super easy to grow as long as you give them lots of sun and mulch, because they are water loving, but with mulch you don't need as much water, so that helps reduce the amount of water you would need for that.
Now basil, I always keep a basil plant in my windowsill because I like fresh basil all year long. I put basil and oregano on almost everything, but I don't keep an oregano plant inside, but I keep a basil plant almost all year. And especially in Montana, because it's so cold, you know, basil to me has got to be the most fragile plant in my garden. You know, the one that's most likely to suffer from a frost. It's just won't take any cold at all.
Yes.
So I always find that. And then tomatoes, although almost everybody's answered that tomatoes were their best crop last year, so far on my podcast, especially from Montana, I'm surprised, because to me, I think tomatoes are tough because It with our short growing season, getting them to get red is tough, to ripen, I guess, is what I mean.
But, that's if you're growing them outside with no no protection. And do you have sunlight in your fall, or is it the cold that gets them, or is it the sunlight too?
It's the cold. I think we have pretty good sun.
So if you get good sun, then it sounds like a passive solar greenhouse, or even just like a little cold frame or some way of putting them on the south side of your house, like maybe right up against a wall would be great, because walls radiate heat at night, which is a reason for my success. Is it does get cold here, but as long as they're by a wall at night, that heat radiates back out to them, so they still get that heat. So that would be good if you put them on a south facing wall, and then you could protect them a little bit with either like a polycarbonate or some kind of plastic. Or
we go down and throw blankets on them. I don't know how. My husband just wakes up like right before it's going to get cold, because you know it's the coldest right when the sun comes up, and he just has like this little ticker, and we go down and throw blankets over everything on the, and we can take a frost like down to like 27 degrees, I think 26, 27, right in there. But like last year, we had a freak frost like the first week of September, went down to 22, and we lost almost our whole garden, the corn and the tomatoes and tons of stuff. I mean, he brought a lot of tomatoes in that were green and they turned red in the kitchen, but it's tomatoes that you pick right off the vine are short and in small supply, I think, at our house. But, you know, I'm going to suggest that growing next to a wall or something, because his tomato plants are... They definitely get lots of sun, and they're in big raised beds, but there's not a wall there, and I wonder if that would
walls
work with the
really,
heat against
really
it.
Help. In all the times that I've grown up, I usually try to get them by a wall of some kind, some really sunny wall, and that really extends the season for them because it creates a microclimate.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So, I like that tip. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate? Anything down there that's tough to grow?
I don't know if I have anything specific, because I like challenges, but I don't have anything that if I gave it any love or attention, it wouldn't grow. But obviously climate has a lot to do with that. So,
now what's your elevation there in Santa Fe? We're at 2,700 feet here.
About 7,000 to 8,000 feet.
Oh, wow. That's pretty tall.
Yeah.
I lived in Santa Fe for a fall one year. It's really pretty. I love the aspens down there. I had no idea. And I worked on that mountain where the aspens are.
The ski mountain.
Yeah. It was just incredible. I couldn't believe how just amazingly beautiful it was.
It's gorgeous. But, yeah.
I didn't realize it was that high of an elevation. So that's good to hear that you're doing all this gardening at such a high elevation.
Yeah.
How about your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Anything you got to force yourself to get out there and just do that you don't like?
I'm pretty low tech about stuff. I think water is pretty important, but to be honest, I don't like to have to water. I like just giving plants a lot of mulch so sometimes when you plan on watering twice a day, you end up watering once a day, and still the plants just grow amazing, you know, as long as you give them a lot of mulch and you give them enough water in the morning or in the evening or whatever. But sometimes I've just had great success regardless. But let me see what else. I don't know if there's anything specific. I think a lot of people don't like to weed. I generally only weed right around the plants, and I use them as mulch too, so there's still organic matter and shade over the soil.
Well, how about your favorite activity to do in the garden?
My favorite activity is to just see how everything's growing. I love it. I just like, I love seeing how big things are getting. And when I have my aquaponic systems up, I love checking on the fish. And I actually love transplanting seedlings into the aquaponic system. I love getting my hands dirty. So
I can't believe I haven't asked you this yet. So what kind of fish? Special fish?
You can grow all kinds of fish, any kind of fish. Depends on, you know, what your climate is. And if you're in a warm climate, you want to grow warm water fish. If you're in a cold climate and you're not in a greenhouse, you're going to want cold climate fish or cold water fish. But you can grow anything from a goldfish to tilapia, catfish, trout. What else?
So then you can eat the fish too.
Koi. Yeah, you can grow either edible fish or ornamental fish. So yeah, you can eat your fish, of course.
Wow, I didn't even think about that part. I was just picturing goldfish, of course. All right, tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Probably your tomatoes, huh? Was there a year that you just had something that was just so prolific you were totally surprised and just outdid itself?
I've grown so many different kinds of things. I mean, I've actually grown in greenhouses and helped start nurseries. I've started flower nurseries. I've started tree nurseries. I've planted all kinds of things. I would say, I don't know if you would call it a best crop, but one of my favorite things to grow besides tomatoes are all kinds of trees. And I haven't been doing that this year, but, you know, when I was in Nicaragua, we were growing all kinds of trees from babies. You know, we'd grow coconuts and moringa and all kinds of nitrogen-fixing trees to grow the soil. And I don't know if that answers your question as a best crop, but they're definitely some of my favorite things to grow.
I could ask you a bunch of questions just about that, but I'm going to keep going because I know you have a time.
Within probably 15 minutes, I have another 15 minutes.
So. Okay. How about the best gardening advice you ever received?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I've I think I've gotten a lot of gardening advice, but the best advice comes from the garden itself, the place you're at, and
I like that.
Observing. You know, the best advice you can have is just observe. Observe what's around you. Observe the sun and the water and the shade and the sunlight and, you know, where things like to grow naturally. And just observe. I think that is the best form of advice you could possibly get. Through observation, I've learned a lot of things. And it's also a basic skill to have, especially in permaculture. It's all about observation, observing, you know, the feedback that the plants and the soil are giving you. And so, yeah, I think observation is the best
That's skill excellent advice
that you could have.
And it's so true. One of my guests said that the best advice she received was the first thing you should put in your garden is a chair. And it was interesting because we had two different, what I was thinking why she said that was because of more what you said, as I can't remember what her answer was, but it's so true. Like, and after living, like growing up in New York, I never knew which way was east, west, north, or south. But after living in Montana, everything I think about is north, south, east, or west. Because I'm always, you know, I know where the sun is. I know what time it comes up in the morning. I know. And even like our house has like a solar passive design. And my husband knows, you know, he built the windows on our south wall so that he knows where the sun is in the winter mm-hmm. as compared to where it is mm-hmm. in the summer. And how
the winter solstice
is,
like, sun versus the summer solstice yeah. sun. Yeah.
And, you know, especially here where like we're getting, you know, the closer we get to the longest day, like we'll have sunlight till 11 o'clock at night before I know it. It's already like 10 o'clock at night. It's still daylight out almost, or 9:30, and you know, we have these really long days in the summertime. But knowing where the sun is, and I always tell people, like, when you build your house, to think, I'm always like, the first thing you should do is go to your property and spend a weekend there in a tent, you know, every yes. season, and get to know where is the sun, because you want to think about that solar passive design for your house and your garden, you know,
exactly.
works the same way. And like, especially we just put bees in, and like where he put the bees and how he built the hives and what their little places, like, you know, was important.
Yeah.
And he's always thinking about that. So
yeah. And in
I think that's great advice.
Yeah. And in permaculture design, that's a basic part. You know, you don't just walk onto a property and start designing where things go. You have to observe. And they, you know, recommend, you know, spend an entire season
uh-huh.
someplace, you know, camp out, spend an entire season. If you're going to build a house, mm-hmm. spend a year, like mm-hmm. reading the landscape, reading where the water falls and where the sun hits, and start mm-hmm. to notice the patterns, because the patterns will tell you everything about what will grow well where, and where the best, you know, sunbathing spot will be, and where mm-hmm. the best drainage would be, and all that. And
It's just about the view.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with, you know, just reading the weeds themselves and the native species that want to grow in your backyard. They'll tell you a lot about your soil and what, you know, I noticed just in my backyard, I have lots of different kinds of weeds that, and I don't like the term weeds actually, but I have all kinds of plants that love to grow on different sides of the backyard. And that already tells me something. If I was to go look up that plant, it would tell me what conditions it likes. And, you know, and so that helps me figure out my planning for gardening or anything else. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely. How about a favorite tool you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what couldn't you live without?
Let me see.
What kind of tools do you use for aquaponics? Are there any special tools that you use for aquaponics as compared to growing in soil?
Not many tools, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I don't need any shovels or rakes or anything. Mm-hmm. I just need my coir
buckets
and vermiculite and my trays so I can seed, and little net pots so I can put the little seedlings in so they can float. But I can't think of a single tool that is so important that I would absolutely need to take with me. Definitely a shovel. I like shovels just for making it easier on digging holes so I can get roots in the ground. But yeah, that's about it. Maybe a really good hose sprinkler head too. Just the more, you know, the more
that is really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially we're realizing we just dug a well. So this is the first time we really have a ton of water as compared to we've always had really very limited water. So I'm noticing that the sprinkler head makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. How about secrets for preserving food or making it last? Like you were saying you make salsa. Do you can it or anything? Or how do you
Can salsa because it doesn't taste the same. I just eat it fresh. Okay.
But you're probably growing it most of the year.
No? Yeah, I grow it and I get so much of it that I have to can it because I can't eat it fast enough. So I still have tomato sauce from last year that I haven't eaten yet. So I'll make tomato sauce, you know. That's one of my favorite things to do. I also like to make jam, like strawberry jam and stuff. And I love that.
I'll bet strawberries grow good in the aquaponics. Do they?
You know, I heard that they do, and that's one thing that I definitely need to try. So that's like one of the things that I really want to grow this year.
Cool. How about, got any special techniques for cooking any weird or unusual foods? You were naming a whole bunch of things I'd never heard of down in Nicaragua. Anything tell us there really quick?
Special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods.
Just something unique or different.
No, we were growing a lot of moringa, which are trees. And moringa is an incredible tree. It is, I believe it comes from Africa. And it's the seeds purify water and the leaves are incredibly nutritious. And you can just take the leaves and put them in salad and I think they're full of vitamin C, like all kinds of vitamins. They're basically considered a superfood. And they're also a nitrogen fixing tree. So they help to fix nitrogen in the soil and build more soil for other plants. But as far as cooking, you don't really need to cook them. They're good, fresh, just like that. And the seeds, you know, you can put them in water. I'm not sure if you just put them fresh in water, but they clean water of all kinds of bad stuff. So it's like a miracle tree.
Cool. I think I had another guest, this guy, Abe Long from Oregon, who him and his wife went down to Peru for like 4 years. And I think he talked about the moringa plant.
Yeah. It's a super medicinal and super nutritional tree to grow.
How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? Is that your salsa or?
I would say salsa, definitely.
What do you put in your salsa?
So any kind of tomato. I love all different colors. I do a little bit of jalapeno, salt, pepper, cumin, onion, garlic, cilantro, and a little bit of apple cider vinegar. Trying to think if I do anything else. Sometimes I put some cayenne. Sometimes I put chipotle instead of jalapeno. Basically tomato, onion, garlic, jalapeno, cilantro, a little bit of apple cider vinegar, and of course a little bit of olive oil, and cumin.
Oh, I like that. I wonder if that's what I need to use is apple cider vinegar instead of just white vinegar.
Oh my God, apple cider vinegar. It is so much more flavorful than white vinegar. Yeah.
I'll bet that'll help. Cool. Awesome. How about a favorite internet resource?
For gardening, I don't use many internet resources for gardening. I just take my experience from permaculture. But if there was a book, it would. Oh, that's your next question.
That's fine. We'll just go right into it. You can.
I don't really have.
I'm just going to put your visionary aquaponics website because everybody's going to want to go there anyway for our favorite internet resource.
Oh, okay,
when you get
great.
That website up and yes. going full time. But they yes. can just listen to your podcast for now. Because your guests are amazing already. I've learned so much and I just heard about your podcast yesterday. So
you're listening to it already?
Oh, yeah.
Well, oh, thank you.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. I put some miles on my car and I have some time to listen.
Oh,
your favorite reading material, your book you were going to tell us?
Well, I would say the Permaculture Designer's Manual is an incredible book.
Cool.
And it really goes into different systems, not just for growing food, but designing houses, ponds, integrated agriculture and integrated aquaculture. And it's an amazing book. And that was kind of a start for me. Awesome. Yeah.
All right. Final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity organization you're passionate about? A project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either in your local area or a national or global scale?
Two things. Mm-hmm. Trees. We really need our trees. And, deforestation is happening on an incredibly rapid pace. And it's really, really sad. It really breaks my heart. Forests are the lungs of the earth. And, because they breathe carbon dioxide and they generate oxygen. And not only that, but so much habitat and so much life. We depend on trees and we depend on our forests, and they're just getting wiped out for dams and agriculture, and we need to work with the forest. We need to garden like the forest, and we need to grow more trees, and we need to protect our trees. They do so much for us. They protect our watersheds. They create oxygen. It's incredible what they do. And there are so many species of medicinal plants and all kinds of things that live in the understory of our forests and that haven't even been discovered yet. And we're wiping them out. And I think it was something like 3 football fields a minute. There's an incredible music video. I'm going to find it really quick, but it's by an activist. Oh my gosh, it's so good. I'm going to have to send you a link to it.
I'll put it in the show notes.
One of the organizations that's associated with this video is called it's called Dear Future Generation, Sorry. It's a music video by Prince EA, I think, or Ia. Prince EA, and he visits Africa on a trip and is a witness to all this deforestation that's happening. And so he wrote this beautiful, powerful music video called Dear Future Generation, Sorry. And I recommend everyone watch that. And so the organization is called Stand for Trees.
Cool.
And I'm not exactly sure how it works, but basically you can buy like a certificate to protect a certain amount of a tree stand. And that's something that I definitely want to promote on my own podcast. Now, even though I'm an aquaponics podcast, I also believe in the long-term future depends on our trees. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is mulch in the desert. We need as much mulch as possible everywhere. We need to stop, weeding and removing roots. At least if we do, put them as mulch on the ground. Put them back on the ground. Don't throw them away. Don't rake up your leaves and just throw them away. They need to be on the soil. We need to protect all of our soils. Coming from someone who's, all about aquaponics and our water, our soils depend on our water, and our water depends on our soils. And the better soil we have, the more water retention we have, the better our watersheds are, and the less problem we're going to have with water. Same thing with trees. You know, the more trees we have, the better our watersheds will be in the long run. I've seen, you know, this place has been a desert since I've lived here, but I know there were tons of trees on the hillside and they were cut down, and the rivers have been, you know, controlled and managed and all this stuff, and there's no more flooding. And because of that, because of the lack of trees and the rivers not being allowed to flood anymore and all this man, you know, control over the environment, it has really had a huge impact on the watershed. And now we're looking at drought. So yeah, we need to really,
there's just two things I was going to mention. Really, you've probably heard of Wangari Maathai, who had won the Nobel Peace Prize back in, and her, tree project in Kenya. Yeah, that she was able to teach women how to restore their landscape, and just what they did to restore parts of Kenya is just amazing. I love her story.
Yeah,
and then the other one is they're trying to build a giant green forest across Africa. That's one of Mike's biggest projects that he likes to support. He always says, if we win the lottery, we're going to support this tree forest that they're trying to build across the top of Africa.
That sounds amazing. So, I want to support that as well. So what if you find the name, let me know.
I'll find the link
to that. I want to sponsor that. So
because that's a big project. That's pretty necessary. Yeah, I love tree. I'm so glad you said that. Nobody said that yet, so I'm glad.
Are you kidding? Nobody has said that yet?
I don't think so. Well, I just that question came up about episode 13 or 14 somewhere, and then I've kind of but yeah, I can't remember anybody talking about trees yet that I can think of off that. I could be forgetting something because it's starting to get to with it. You're episode 43, and I'm just so excited. The podcast is going so much better than I thought it would. So anyway, I know you got to go. Last thing, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt or into that water and start their own garden?
Ooh. I think growing something, anything, a tree, a plant, a flower, anything, is such a great way to know yourself. And just learning, if you've never done anything like it before, it's really life-changing because you start to realize how much power you do have over your environment and how much you can really create. And we're meant to be creators. We're not meant to be destroyers, you know. And the more we can create, the better we feel about ourselves, the more we feel we can contribute. And when you see a little plant start to grow and you start to see the roots and you start to nurture it a little bit and you start to realize it, what it needs and stuff, and also how it can be less dependent on you and how you can give it, you know, the best, you know, bedding possible just to let it grow without you. I don't know. It's just such a satisfying thing. I really Perfect. See it as a way to grow yourself as well and grow your own spirit and your connection to the earth and grow your own roots inside you. It's just a reflection of your own process, your own learning, and your own creativity.
Oh, that is so perfect. And it leads right into, we just started a thing called the 2015 Gardening Challenge, where we challenged our listeners to pick just one fruit, vegetable, or flower to grow for a season for this year. And we're having a little contest I'll tell people about after we're done. I know you got to go. Thank you so much, Maribou.
You're welcome.
For sharing this incredible knowledge. I know I told you it would only be a half hour, but
oh no, you know what? It's fine. This is my first podcast that I've ever been on, and I'm really excited to be on your podcast. I feel honored. And also today I had submitted an article for a magazine called Aquaponic Survival Communities Magazine, and it also just came out today. So today marks not only Mother's Day, a very creative day, but also a being, you know, a guest, my being a guest for the very first time on someone else's podcast and also having an article in a magazine for the very first time ever. So it's a very creative and beautiful, auspicious day.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. And I just know you're going to do great because you have tons of knowledge to share, and your podcast already, your downloads are doing super, and just I think you're going to be fantastic. So
Thank you.
Will put the show links for everybody in the notes. And once again, your podcast is Visionary Aquaponics. You can people can download it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, right? And SoundCloud maybe?
Yeah, not SoundCloud yet, but eventually it will be.
And then your website's going to be up and running soon. So.
Visionaryaquaponics.com. Yep.
And you've got your Facebook page?
I've got my Facebook page. I'm very active on there. So if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me on my Facebook page. Or Maribu@visionaryaquaponics.com.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks, Maribu.
You're welcome, Jackie. It was so good talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. This week, we posted our first gardening challenge for 2015. If you go to our website at awesomemontana.com, that's AWESOMEMONTANA, and click on the top where it says Gardening Challenge, 2015 Gardening Challenge. You can fill out the form, or you can just send me an email to the organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com and just include your name. How many people are in your household? What vegetable, fruit, or flower do you want to grow this season? How much do you plan to grow? And the challenge is to grow enough for your family for 2 to 3 months. We just went with the season because it's our first challenge and it is kind of late this year. If you're going to pick a flower, I would just, you know, pick like, plan on growing like enough to have one or two, to pick one or two bouquets a week. If you're going to pick like a vegetable, like lettuce, you know, how much lettuce would your family eat? You know, a couple of salads a week, or maybe, you know, you're like me, need a salad almost every day or twice a day. If you want to pick a vegetable like carrots or potatoes, how much would you buy from the store? Would you buy like a 2 pound bag of carrots once a week? You know, a 10 pound bag of potatoes once a week or once every 2 weeks? You know, how much does your family usually eat? So what would you, you know, kind of figure out what you would eat in a season, and then just tell us where you're located. And if you want to send any pictures, we would love to share some pictures on our website and just get to know our listeners and what can we help you with? That's the biggest, question. You know, is there anything that we can do to help your garden be successful? You know, we just really want to share our love and knowledge of gardening and do anything to help our listeners. So I really want to encourage you to check out our website. Like I said, the easiest way to get there is go to awesomemontana.com, click on the link for Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast. And then if you, the show notes are there for all the shows. If you want to, you know, if there was a guest you listened to that you want to hear from or see their show notes, the links to everything is always up. And then, you know, there's some great resources there, of course. And also, just send us an email to theorganicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. It's just organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. There's no spaces in between. It's all lowercase. Just organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Thank you so much for listening. We broke 20,000 downloads today. I just can't believe it. The podcast is just doing so well, so we must be doing something right. And I just appreciate everybody who's listening and send us any emails or feedback. You know, you can find us on Twitter. I think it's Organic G Podcast is our handle, @OrganicGPodcast on Twitter. You know, you can reach out to me there, but certainly emails goes right to my phone. I check it every single day. Twitter, I check, you know, every couple of days or something. But just let us know how it's going, if we can do anything, and sign up for the gardening challenge. There's a copy of Rodale's Ultimate Encyclopedia of Gardening that's going to go to one winner. Thanks for listening.